how would the people of the Middle East feel comfortable with a rogue state that even the UN cannot control or even ask them to declare? They started their weapons program 1949 in the Negev. 1949.
Yep.
We're told 4 years after they've all been disposed of. The whole thing is open to investigation, and it must
well,
be.
But you know, as soon as I made a second call to him after he had done a talk with me, he was told that if he took another call from outside the country, he'd be jailed.
Yes.
And I got a call into him, and they put him back in jail.
Yes. It's tragic, really. I very much regard this man as a hero. He really is a hero, because to have exposed and stood up and I think all of these people are, it's wonderful that we do have these people, and we should be celebrating these people who will stand firm and challenge the seemingly invincible.
Well, you know, the reason I brought them up, Lady Michelle, was because I have a real strong support for Benjamin Friedman. And
yes,
Ben Friedman,
another very brave man.
Oh, yes.
Another brave man who exposes many of these things.
Yes. Well, the reason I bring them up is because in each case of the ladies and gentlemen in the audience, these are Jews that have looked at
Some of them call themselves ex-Jews, which is particularly the type of person I like. I very much respect a man who will say he's an ex-Jew, because in my lexicon, you don't have to be Jewish to be Jew-ish. What I don't like is Jew-ish. And you certainly don't have to be Jewish to be Jewish. Some of the worst people on the planet.
I have to say that I don't have a problem with Jews as a group. And I went to school in New York City, so I had some people I knew quite well there that are just kind-hearted human beings and they do consider themselves Jewish. And the fact is, there is an elite, a top to this crime gang. It happens to traverse borders. It doesn't sit in any one country. We've got names like Oppenheimer and Rothschild and Brofman and I could go on for hours, and Honig and Warburg and it goes on. But the fact of the matter is they are identifiable. Their wealth is easily identifiable, and the networks that they work out of are identifiable. My point to you is this, is that not all the Jews are involved. The rank-and-file guy that owns a little tailor shop in my hometown is Jewish. This man is not involved in this. I know he's not. So our job is to not vilify people who have done no wrong, but it's also to be very forthright in the fact that there is a leadership of this group that is behind it, and they are identified as being Jews. So we have to be able to identify these people and use a little bit of intellect when we're making our descriptions, because if we're not very clear, we're open to that epithet of anti-Semite.
Yes, but, you know, first of all, before you can have anti-Semite, you have to have, which is another propaganda term, because it's trying to make a genetic concept out of something that actually isn't genetic. But, you know, there's no problem in demonizing Iran, for example. That means everybody in Iran is a demon. That kind of anti-Iran Iran is seems to be okay for the press. So some racial demonizing is okay, but some isn't.
Do you remember what they did in Sweden by the profaning the Prophet Muhammad in a cartoon? And it was clearly insulting. It was clearly wrong. And yet they were not even asked to remove the cartoon that was so offensive. Can you imagine us trying to do something similar to that in France? With the Chabad Lubavitch and starting drawing pictures of the Lubavitch and Menachem Schneerson or something.
You're speaking of Professor Forreston, whom I admire very much, and let me read from the back of my DVD cover, because I attended his trial on the 11th of July 2006, where the state prosecutor, in her summing up, read out a prayer by someone whom she did not name, asking Yahweh to protect his chosen people against deceitful lips. I mean, what a scandal if she had invoked Allah, God, or Buddha. She's supposed to be the voice of the secular republic, for a start. So,
yep.
What is this kind of biased prejudice that we are getting in our courtrooms, which is separating justice from scientific attitude? And I keep trying to sort of urge this awareness of our civilizations for Hellenic virtues. They're supposed to be inseparable, Daryl. It's like a four legs to a stable table. The first of the four is temperance, which is in relation to a proportion and balance and sense of measure. The second is justice. The third is wisdom, but wisdom in relation to scientific attitude, which is shared. This Hellenic idea is shared with the Iranians in particular,
yes.
And the West. And that means they're source critical. And the fourth one is courage. Now, these four virtues in the Hellenic spirit, which is the basis of our culture, and the basis of the Iranian culture for sure, are supposed to be inseparable. Now, they are being separated in our courtrooms. And this is why this is happening to Professor Faurisson and so on. And if only we could establish this as the basis of something we all agree with, regardless of religion, regardless of race, regardless of anything, this classical tradition, we would not be allowing this sort of, for example, this Stockholm Forum 2000 guidelines for teaching the Holocaust in schools. Because if I can just quote you from that, it says, care must be taken not to give a platform for deniers, by which they mean revisionists, or seek to disprove the denier's position through normal historical debate and rational argument. Now that's a quote for how we are supposed to be teaching the Holocaust in schools.
Now, let's wait a minute. I'd like to do something right now. There's a family called Bonnier in Sweden who are the richest people in Sweden. They're Zionist Jews. They own the press in Sweden, and they are the progenitors of that new policy. And you'll note that that they have been pushing for this same law here in France. President Sarkozy, one of his first acts, was to demand that every school child of age 8 or 9 learn about how...
Simply appalling that one should brutalize children of that age with war crimes and all sorts of horrible things of this nature. It is really just awful. And of course, the first thing that the president of France does is to announce that anyone who insults a Jew insults France. And I say, vive la whom? I mean, isn't the French president supposed to be defending French people? Is his primary role?
Well, he doesn't claim to see. His grandfather was one of the leading people in Greece, in the Salonika, Greece Jewish community. His grandfather was one of the leaders of it. His name in Hebrew means the messenger. And his grandfather raised him after his family left Salonika, Greece. Now, we're talking about the Young Turks. We're talking about the same group that generated Ataturk, which destroyed the Turkish faith.
Yes, all those Young Turks need to be very closely examined, I think.
Well, they're all Dunmei.
They must have wanted to play off the Turkish element there and bring in the Armenians and so on. All of that area needs very close examination, I think.
But my point is that now I wanted to bring up a special point here because people need to understand this, and I bring it up in many ways about the idea of crypto-Zionists and crypto-Jews. Now, Mr. Sarkozy's entire family is Jewish. His mother, his grandfather. His son just married the richest heiress in France, who is a Jewish heiress of the Darty fortune, and his wife is Jewish, and Carla Bruni, and his previous wife was Jewish. So my point is, and then he claims to be a Christian. Now we've seen this.
But listen, we have Blair and Brown in this country who are not Jewish, but I would call them Jewish. They're just as bad. because
Lady Michelle, what I've discovered is people like Madeleine Albright, in the middle of her term as Secretary of State, got in front of the cameras and said she just recently discovered she was Jewish. Or a man named Wesley Clark, who was leading the battle in the Serbia and in Yugoslavia, killing and destroying people and destroying that country, happens to find out later that he was Jewish. And
she said that the killing of all of those Iranian Iraqi children was a price worth paying.
That's right.
And many non-Jews said the same. So you don't have to be Jewish to be Jewish, i.e. Zionist.
Yes, but what I'm trying to bring up here is that the leadership roles, though, see, these people are foot soldiers for the real criminals, Lady Michelle. The real criminals sit above the fray, and they send down their foot soldiers to do their dirty work for them. And you'll note that all of these people have roots back to great fortunes and great powerful networks that they've set up over many, many decades and sometimes centuries. And what we need to do is actually discuss how they do it, why they're doing it, and who is doing it. Because if people become aware of the names and what their activities are and their organizations, we'll be able to identify them in our daily lives. And this is the way to begin to get an awareness for people. I make a statement about this company called Veolia. Everyone's starting to see them all over the continent of Europe. Well, Veolia is a Rothschild-run company. They've bought up all public services in almost every country in Europe. The simple fact of the matter is I would like people to walk by it, and when they see a Veolia on a bus system, which they bought bus systems in Sweden, or when they see it on a rubbish pickup site here in France, or the water systems in Britain, it's Veolia each time, that they relate the fact that that big corporation is owned and operated by this man, and this man has been committing crimes in the name of Zionism for hundreds of years.
That's right. Certainly, the name of Rothschild is synonymous with Zionism, that is for sure. And Zionism, as we see in the manifesto, in their own words, this is not a conspiracy theory. It is a conspiracy, but we have it in their own words.
That's right. How desperate times do you think we're in? Do you think we're making headway, Lady Michelle, or are we finding ourselves like previous generations who've tried to fight these people? Are we gonna fizzle out?
We have a different thing that was not available to Henry Ford. We have the internet. We have the ability to speak like we are now, and many people can hear us, and they can judge. They can judge whether we're right or wrong.
Yes.
I say the revisionists can be judged for whether they're right or wrong. I myself am not a revisionist. I say we have a right to hear what their argument is and to debate it. That is the fundamental source-critical nature of our civilization.
You know, there are a lot of women from
Britain...
Not
whether they're right or wrong, but whether we can debate it.
Well, Lady Michelle, there are a lot of people, a lot of women from Britain who have preceded you in this fight. Of course, Elizabeth Dillings is one of them, and also Nesta Webster. Of course, Nesta Webster is a hero of mine, and she was one of the first books that I read on this subject. This woman is, not only was she well-educated, but she was courageous beyond anybody that I read about today, by putting her heart and soul into this fight, in spite of losing everything as a result, much like Archibald Maul Ramsey did. So my point is that we need people with courage. How do we spark that need in humans to be courageous in face of these kinds of crime waves? Courage seems to have been lost.
I think we have to live our life bravely, Darrell. That is the most exciting way to live life, is bravely. I think we intended to live it bravely. And I don't come from having read anybody else's work, as it were. I come to this from a lifelong, literally lifelong expertise in acting in television commercials internationally. It's a very curious background that I have from the point of view of what I bring to the argument, because I bring to it the concept of packaging and persuasion and whether we are something is correctly packaged or mispackaged and sold to us in our interest or not in our interest. And I've simply applied that expertise and observation to politics and the things around me. I haven't read, well, of course, eventually I have, but the prompt was not from other people's observations, but simply directly from my own, not from any sort of colouring or prejudice or anything else, just from the simple observation and from the very experience I had when I met a British serviceman who'd served in Palestine 1945 to 48, who told a very different story to that story, which awakened my interest in all of that, all that springs from that disaster, that catastrophe that happened to the Palestinians and, frankly, to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Because we have all been brutalized and sullied into this lie about the founding of Israel and what it's about. And
that's right.
There are many Jews, many honest Jews, not enough of them, but many of them, who believe, as actually I do, and the Neturei Carter rabbis, who stand firm and came to risk themselves and went to the Tehran conference. They spoke up there. They're not revisionists, but they say that the founding of Israel is completely phony. And they spoke very honestly about that, and for their pains, they have been refused burials in the Jewish burial grounds here in Manchester, and they have been abused and had their houses firebombed and all kinds of things. So, you know, we have to take courage from the fact that there are many people who have done many things in our history that we can be proud of, and we should celebrate them and keep trying to use them as our role models and not allow ourselves to be sullied and brutalized into becoming consumers.
You're right. Now, my approach to this, I started only 5 years ago. I learned of this truth 5 years ago. But I'm prolific when I begin to study a subject, and I have read hundreds of books on the subject. And I study them, and I learn them, and I learn the facts, and I collate. And what I've become over these 5 years is literally a master of these facts, because I've made it my point. And what I try to do is find ways of bringing the debate to people around the world. We're being heard, and we will be heard, Lady Michelle, in 152 countries. That's how many countries download from my website or that we're reaching right now on this radio network. The point is that we are making a worldwide impact with the facts, because I don't want to be a generator of lies, and I don't want to have propaganda being spewed from my lips, not because I made a mistake in my research, you see. And so I do read the books, and I do check on the work and make sure it comes out looking like it's valid. It has to be valid. So one of the reasons I do that is, and this is the same process that's been taken by Ernst Zundel or by Frederick Tobin. They approach this in a very pedantic and slow method. They check their facts. They look against the things. And so when somebody speaks from study and research and then is arrested and jailed for voicing an opinion based upon that research, what we have to conclude is that the real person who has something to hide is anyone but the person being prosecuted here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is something interesting happening at Auschwitz, in fact, that your listeners might like to take an interest in. There is a move to ask the world to actually pay a lot of money to restore what is called relics there. Now, if we were to do that, what I would suggest that we simply have the proviso when we're providing these thousands and millions of pounds for this restoration work at Auschwitz, that we say, yes, okay, we will help you restore these relics, as if it's a religious organization, but at the same time there must be allowed normal historical forensic study and examination of this site. Now that doesn't seem to be too hard too difficult to ask, and it should be part and parcel of the restoration of this place, so that we can find out precisely using, that's why I say there is no such thing as historical truth as set in stone, which is the basis of this European arrest warrant the minute on Dr. Tobin, because we have all the time in our fields of endeavor developing new ways of examining, new geological techniques, new DNA techniques, records turn up, new documents are released for examination. The truth in history is a constantly evolving thing. It is never set in stone. You cannot condemn people for denying historical truth. There's no such thing as historical truth as set in stone.
And that is exactly.
This must be perhaps something that could be evaluated at the same time, so that we know precisely what it happened at Auschwitz.
Can you give us a list?
Changed there, but you know, from 4 million to 1 million, the two popes have blessed two different sets of plaques. In 79, Pope Pius blessed the plaques that said 4 million people perished there. Then, more recently, Benedict blessed 1.2. Those plaques, the 4 million, have been removed, and now it's 1.2. But if people say 6 minus 3 equals 3, this is called Holocaust denial. So mathematically, we are teaching our children that 6 minus 3 must equal 6. Otherwise, in 10 countries, you can literally be imprisoned, because as Professor Forreston pointed out, that in November 2005, the UN decided a universal ban on revisionism, because an Israeli drafted resolution, which proclaimed January 27th is International Day of Commemoration of the Memories of the Victims of the Holocaust, because it said it rejects any denial of the Holocaust as an historical event in either full or part. Now that means that you cannot say, well, if the plaques at Auschwitz have been changed from 4 million to 1 million, doesn't the 6 million figure come down? That is called Holocaust denial. Or if you want to say, well, the human beings, the Jews were at these camps, were not made into soap, which all scholars now agree this was a propaganda story. You are not allowed to say that in 10 countries, because you can be imprisoned, because you are diminishing the narrative of the Holocaust. I mean, this is this kind of thing can be stopped if we can incorporate in the salvaging of this museum the truth, the looking for the truth. And
now I've got a question for you, Lady Michelle. Could you maybe give a short list of some people still in jail right now, as we speak, sitting in a small barred room somewhere in this world for the very subject that you just discussed? Could you give some names out so the listener can actually have the idea that there are people who right now without freedom to move in their world because of this?
Well, you have Mr. Froelich, who actually went along to the Tehran conference, and he got up and said, I can say nothing, because if I do, I'll be imprisoned. Now he is imprisoned because he went there. There is Professor Forreston, who has been heavily fined and may be imprisoned, because a speech he gave may have been heard by French listeners. You have Dr. Herbert Schaller, who was successful in getting Irving, the historian, the British historian David Irving, out of prison in Austria for the so-called 10 words he uttered 16 years ago, which incited no violence, which were intended to incite no violence whatsoever, and he was given 3 years, and they wanted to, he would still be in prison, but for the successful debate of Dr. Schaller in the court. Otherwise, he would still be in an Austrian jail for 10 words, which were, in which he said nothing about being malicious or inciting anything. Then you have Ernst Sundel, who spent 2 years in the Canadian prison for nothing. Then he was transferred to Mannheim, and now he's there for 5 years for nothing, for an opinion. He is a pacifist. He's never incited violence. He simply says we must be able to look at source critically at history. We must be able to examine precisely what were the upsides and the downsides of the Third Reich. That is, without completely demonizing, as if the Germans coming out of the international monetary system was a bad thing, when in fact, when we're looking around today, we have to wonder whether that was a smart move in the interest of the German people.
Yeah.
This across-the-board demonizing is absurd.
And how about Gamow Rudolph?
Lawyers being imprisoned like Sylvia Stolz for defending their clients too well.
And she's in jail for how many years?
Is also up for being imprisoned. There's Verbeke, who's been imprisoned. There's Manfred Rode, who has spent 10 years in prison. There are so many of these people who have been heroic in just standing up and saying, we think source criticism is the basis of our culture. Let us examine this history forensically, geologically, scientifically. Let us not separate justice from science. And, you know, whether they're right or wrong, I applaud their right and their putting themselves on the line as they do to stand firm and not allow ourselves to be fallen to a police state situation.
Free speech is not free, Lady Michelle. It is something we have to battle for every day of our lives. And anybody who thinks...
Free inquiry, to me, is the stance. Free inquiry.
Right. But free speech and free thought and free ideas and free movement and freedom itself is not free. We must stand up and be courageous to ensure we have those things in our lives. And there is always going to be...
Source critical research is key actually to our civilization, really. Without it, we are losing it. But we do have this wonderful internet. We do have these means to communicate with each other, so we can give ourselves democratic choice in what we want in public information. The democracy depends on an informed public, and at the moment it's totally prejudiced and pro-Zionist, and that is not democracy. We must fight for that right to hear the alternate opinion in a debate.
Right. Well, we've come to the end of our hour, Lady Michelle Renouf, and I must say to you, thank you so much. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is not Lady Michelle Renouf's first visit with me. It's her second. You can go into the archives at IamTheWitness.com, and you will find our previous discussion we had for, I believe it was an hour the last time as well. Again, I want to thank you so much. Would you like to give out that website you did in the first instance one other time?
Well, it's not my website, but it's a website started by someone who liked my DVD called Jailing Opinions so much. He started www.jailingopinions.com. That's JAILINGOPINIONS.com. And there you will find much of the activities I do, in which I simply ask for source critical attitude toward life as our humane way of dealing with truth and looking for justice in a rational manner.
Again, we've come to the end of our hour. I'm very grateful to have had you on for this hour. Very informative, and a great time for people to learn. And it's time now, ladies and gentlemen, to think about taking action before more rights are removed from us. I'm certain that free speech in many countries that are listening right now across Pan-Africa and Europe, people are aware that the rights need to be fought for. You will never have a right guaranteed to you without your willingness to stand up and defend it. So that, with that, I will tell you all, please, take care of your families. There are tough times ahead, and I wish everyone to become closer to the people you love. Take care of them, stand up for them, be part of their lives, and teach them about the historic events that we're discussing today and others. And until the next time, this is Daryl.
Live bravely like you do, Daryl. Bravo to you for your energy.
Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well. Bye-bye.